Hello and welcome to the Road to the Garden podcast. What a night here in the Big East. Yeah, the Friars taking down number four, UConn. UConn dropping two games in a row. This is a huge moment, I feel like. Maybe possibly a turning point in the Big East this season. We're going to be talking about it. That's George Hathaway and Chris Thedinga joining me. Thanks for coming on. How you guys doing tonight?
You know, could be better. Matt, after watching the UConn game, but overall doing pretty great.
Yeah, better than George. That's
yeah. George is our UConn writer. I'm the Providence guy. So a little clash here, which should make it fun. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, George. To hear the UConn perspective on this. Before we get into this, quick reminder here. We've teamed up with SeatGeek this season to get you the best deals for tickets to your favorite teams. SeatGeek takes the confusion out of buying tickets, and they're here to give you some great deals. Get in on the fun and head over to SeatGeek, download their app, and use code NCAA Hoops Digest for $20 off your first purchase. Did you miss that game tonight and you want to go when Providence plays at UConn? Use that code. You can get your tickets. Get them a little bit cheaper when you do it. Also, a reminder, this podcast is presented by House Enterprise and in partnership with House of College Hoops. Head over to our site, house-enterprise.com, for more info. That's where we have our power rankings. We'll be very interested to see how the power rankings come out this week after this one. Friars now 5-0 in Big East play. UConn drops to 3-2 in the Big East. George, I want to start with you here. What's your initial reaction to the game tonight?
It's a tough loss, but overall it was a great game. I think this is one in the calendar that you would expect UConn to kind of drop. I feel like, especially playing a Providence team who's now 5-0 in conference play for the first time in school history, you knew going into this in the atmosphere, it was going to be tough to play in. This is going to be what it's going to be like down the road in March. It's going to be even crazier then. This is just a little taste of that. So this is a true test to UConn. Now losing back-to-back games in Big East, I don't want to count them out yet and say this is the downfall, but I think you just need to have these little road bumps early on in Big East play in order to kind of fix yourselves down the road.
It's interesting you mentioned that in the spot in the calendar, because I was looking at this earlier in the week, and Xavier back in 2018, the team ended up winning the Big East and getting the number one seed in the tournament. They lost back-to-back road games at basically this exact point in the calendar that season. They lost at Providence, they lost at Villanova right then, and then they recovered from that. I mean, winning on the road in the conference is very, very difficult. So yeah, these aren't bad losses, but they are losses, and that's different for UConn right now.
It certainly is, especially coming into the ranks number four. Everybody's going to be headhunting UConn. Everyone's going to be out looking for them to see if they can knock down the Goliath right now in Big East. And two teams have done so already. So it's going to be interesting to see where UConn's going to be ranked now in AP. I'm assuming they're going to drop to outside the top 10. They're going to be, you know, somewhere in that 10 to 15 range after a few losses like that. So I think it was a sloppy game for UConn looking at it. I feel like they're all over the place. And they didn't shoot the ball that well. This is a team that, you know, traditionally can shoot the three ball. I mean, we saw a lot of great shooting from outside the arc from UConn in non-conference. And then even in a few of those games early on, like against Georgetown or Villanova. But even tonight against Providence, they shot 22% from beyond the arc, you know, and they only made five of them. This, you know, something that we haven't seen UConn do too much. This is something that we've talked about before, Matt, is that UConn, if they're able to knock down the three, they also have Sanogo and Klingon in there to kind of space out the floor a little bit. But having both of them in, which is something we haven't really seen in Big East play, it felt a little crowded. You know, you saw those triple teams down low on Klingon, who just wasn't able to kind of finish down low. And then same thing happened with Adama Sanogo, who's supposed to be the Big East player of the year.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Big East player of the year thing for a second while you mentioned that, because Sanogo was kind of the clear guy coming into the season with Kalkbrenner as another guy, probably the second place guy in that conversation. We're at a point now where I think those are second and third, and Bryce Hopkins is probably at the top after this one. Chris, what's your perspective on that?
Man, it's tough to argue against Bryce with his last few games. I don't know. It's a really tough call. If it was, if the award was most valuable player, I would go Kalkbrenner. But it is player of the year. So yeah, I think it's either Bryce or Sanogo, but I think Cleegan almost hurts Sanogo's stock for that award. So yeah, if I had to vote right now, I would certainly say Hopkins.
Yeah, he was incredible tonight for the Friars. 27 points in the win, 6 of 12 from the field, 13 of 15 from the stripe. He also added 5 rebounds. But I think in the first half, I think the first thing that jumped out at me when watching this game was the way he dominated that matchup with Alex Caravan whenever he had the ball. He was just taking him to the basket seemingly at will when nobody else on Providence could do that. I thought UConn actually played really, really good defense for most of the game. Mm-hmm. Problem was that the Friars got just enough looks. I think they made some difficult shots too, which was something they honestly have not done much through this point in the season.
Yeah, George, I'm curious your thoughts here, because now UConn has played 3 teams with bigger forwards that are athletic and can score. And mm-hmm. Hopkins had 27-5 today. Fremantle went 16-11 when they lost to Xavier. And Brandon Miller of Alabama had 18-9. That certainly seems kind of like the formula to beat UConn, right? Is just take it at Caravan. And if you have a bigger power forward type player that can, you know, score off the bounce and shoot. So, yeah, I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I think that could be the Achilles heel of this UConn team. You know, you have guys, especially in the Big East, that are a lot bigger. And we're going to see that against Creighton on Saturday, which I know we're going to get into a little bit. But, you know, I think that if they're able to attack, you know, take those guys outside and then just drive on the lane, I think that is the downfall of UConn this year. And it's kind of good to kind of see that early on right now that, you know, what can UConn fix? Because I think in the non-conference games, we're like, oh, you know, UConn really has no weaknesses right now. And kind of these first 5 games of Big East play, we're looking at, okay, so here are the weaknesses right now. And it's good to address them early on, fix it down the road so that, you know, come March, come the Big East tournament, those problems are all fixed when, you know, they see these guys for possibly a third time.
Yeah, that's you bring up a good point there that this, if there's a time to see it, you want to see it now. You want to know what the issues are now, because you don't want to find out on the second or third weekend in March, oh, this was an issue for us. You don't want that to be the moment and suddenly you're out early. So I'm intrigued to see how Dan Hurley adjusts to that. And that's where the double big thing came in. The other part of that, I thought that was interesting. We saw Butler do it against Providence last week. They started Jalen Thomas and Manny Bates. So I think this was also Hurley trying to go after the backup big. I think Ed Croswell was fantastic tonight. Mm-hmm. He's not as good as Sanogo, but he can be like 80% of Sanogo. And that's enough. That's a really, really good player to be that guy. I thought he was good on defense tonight too. But Clifton Moore and Rafael Castro have been iffy. Is that second center? I thought Dan Hurley tried to go after that, and the Friars adjusted well. This is, I think, the best defensive effort we've seen from Providence all year long.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, Croswell, and he didn't get in foul trouble, and that's huge, right? With Castro and Clifton Moore not being awesome off the bench, it's imperative that he's able to play, you know, 30 minutes or something like that. And he did. 3 fouls against Sanogo, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I agree there. I mean, I think foul was huge in this game. And I think everybody knows this. These games, especially in conference, no matter what conference you're playing in, it's going to come down to free throws at the end of the day. UConn, their last 2 losses have struggled from the charity stripe. I mean, they shot 52% tonight against Providence. And, you know, Providence shot 82 from the line, from the free throw line. So you're going to have to win these games by making free throws. And that starts with attacking the basket, getting good looks down low. And I think that they were able to do it non-conference with Klingon and Sanogo down low. But now it's a different style of play that they're going to have to get adjusted to.
Yeah, and this is kind of the double-edged sword that is UConn's defense this year too. UConn's defense is fantastic, especially on the ball. They create such ball pressure. But the side effect of that is you're just going to foul more than other teams mm-hmm. do. And like, I think one of the things we've seen with Providence this year too is when the Friar defense is bad, it's so bad that they are not close enough to foul the other team. And UConn never has that problem. Even when it's bad defense, they're close. So when they get one step off, it's a lot of fouling. This is an issue UConn's had all year. They're one of the worst teams at sending, worst defenses at sending other teams to the line in the country. And the Friars are in the top 20 in free throw rate here. So you put the two together and you got an offense that goes to the line a lot and knows how to drive and take advantage of defenses. I think moves the ball well to create those opportunities too against a defense that's really been the only weakness for UConn. And I think that's what set up that disparity tonight. And it's kind of obvious coming in that was going to be a factor. And the Friars did what kind of the chalk said was going to happen there.
Yeah, and these are two of the best coaches going at it tonight. And, with Ed Cooley being, coach of the year last year, Danny Hurley, a front runner for that this year. So, I mean, these are two masterminds going at it. They know each other's weaknesses as well. And Ed Cooley just attacked that so much better than Danny Hurley did tonight.
Yeah. And I think, go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was just going to say, Matt, the last time I was on here, I believe, we had talked about how Providence was kind of disjointed and they looked like five individual pieces out there playing their first game, but like game together. It is so the opposite way now. And it's insane how quickly that changed. And they're such a unit. And that speaks to how well Cooley handles everything within the program, right? Not just the X's and O's, but everything about that program has the Cooley stamp on it. And it's fantastic.
Yeah. This is a Providence defense that really has been just fine coming for most of this season. And even you look back at the start of conference play, giving up a career high to Kadari Richmond, giving up a career high to Tyler Kolek, giving up 98 points to a Marquette offense. Obviously, it goes to double overtime, but Marquette kind of scored at will for most of that game. And it seems like the last three games here where that defense has come together, which is huge for, I mean, that's what Ed Cooley teams have kind of always done. They end up holding UConn to just 61 points in this one. You look back in the schedule when they played DePaul on New Year's Day, held them to 59. They held Butler to just 52. So it's a defense that I think has turned a corner, and an offense that's clearly very good at getting to the line, and that's going to get you a lot of points. So this Friar team, the way it has turned around here in a quick stretch is incredibly impressive. And this is I think we saw flaws with UConn tonight, but I came away from this thinking more about Providence is really good than, oh, UConn's not a good team.
I can see that. I mean, I did look at this game and I was like, wow, Providence, they could run it back again for Big East regular season champs, but they looked very good. And for UConn, I was watching this game and I was just kind of shaking my head a lot of the times. And I was like, oh, this is not good basketball. I mean, there's one point they had a 5-on-4 in transition, and then they turned the ball over. And I was like, what are we doing? You can't be turning the ball over in a situation like that. And I think that hurt them. There's a few misplays here and there that they just had to knock down some shots, had some open looks. But, I mean, they had 8 turnovers tonight, UConn, and then Providence only had 9. Very low turnover game, especially for a conference game with this caliber. But I think that, UConn just needs to play crisper basketball now in Big East play after losing back-to-back games.
I know we talked on the show, I don't remember who was on for it, but we talked about how at one point the only flaw we had with UConn was that they hadn't been in any close games. They'd been blowing teams out by so much. They had no close games. We didn't know what this team looked like when they got down. They got into a situation where they had to grit it out. And this is back-to-back games now where I think this is kind of a question of, all right, can these guys do it? I think the lack of having any guard right now other than Hawkins who can get you a bucket when you need one is really tough. Outside of Hawkins, the rest of that backcourt gave you 12 points combined tonight. You get 6 from Tristan Newton. He had 5 assists, so he does something there, but only 6 points from him, 3 from Andre Jackson, Calcaterra 0-for-5 from the field, 0-for-4 from deep. Nahim Aline, 2 points. Hassan Diarra, 1 point. You're not going to win a lot of games when that's what your backcourt is doing, and this is with Jared Bynum missed most of this game for the Friars too, and you would expect UConn to have an advantage in the backcourt, and they did not tonight.
Yeah, and I think that was a strength going into this season was the depth that UConn has, where you can ask anybody to really step up and they will be able to deliver. And we did see that tonight, from a lot of the bench and when it comes to scoring. And I think that's what hurt them a lot today was that just you know, nobody really kind of came to play except for Jordan Hawkins, who had 15 points. Everybody else had like 11. You know, I think there is some, I think Klingon had 11 as well or something like that. And so, you know, UConn, you have to ask the bench. I mean, I think I remember Fanta saying something about how UConn is a very deep team and one of the deepest teams in college basketball, so that they need to show that now in Big East.
Which yeah. is, it's crazy when you say that, because UConn had 15 bench points. The Providence is five. That was it. Chris, go ahead.
I was just going to say Tristan Newton. Now he's just shooting 34% from the field this year now. I don't know, maybe. And it's tough because there's not, I mean, who do you play instead of him, but maybe trim down the Newton minutes just a little bit. He's just kind of been an offensive liability out there at times, in my opinion. 3 of 11 again tonight. Like he's just not hitting the shots he did at East Carolina last year.
Mm-hmm. And I think he still might be their best point guard option. That's yeah. the issue here. If you trim it down, it's who are you giving it to?
Right. It's tough.
Yeah. We talked, my kind of diagnosis of this UConn team in the offseason was the issues they struggled with the last 2 years is that they didn't have guards who could hit shots. So they'd crash the glass. They play good defense. They'd be in close games. And then in a lot of games, it came down to they just couldn't make the shot. Obviously, they did in that one against Villanova late, but they had their issues. And I thought they addressed that in the transfer portal. And it looked like it for most of the season. But this is, again, back-to-back games where they get down and then late, they have guys just chucking up shots and nobody yeah. can hit one.
Yeah, that's the one thing about, you know, what I've noticed about these last two games for UConn is that when they are down and it's the final 2 minutes, they're just throwing up threes, you know, hoping that they can play some catch-up basketball here. But that's not how you're going to do it. You know, if you got 3 minutes left in a game, you know, you're down seven, you could easily come back, utilize some timeouts, and just drive an attack and make some stops. I mean, it's easier said than done, of course, when, you know, Hopkins is putting up 27 on you and he's just shooting lights out and doesn't miss for some reason. Even the craziest shots go in. So it was just one of those nights where, you know, good defense, but there's better offense. But, you know, you can't just be chucking up threes and hoping for a prayer at the end of the day.
Yeah, especially when you have two of the top 15 centers in all of college mm-hmm. basketball, right? Working inside. Come on.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is where I thought the Providence defense did a fantastic job of mm-hmm. actually clogging up those lanes. I thought both teams did a really good job of like denying entry passes and not letting the ball get down low. And that's where I thought the Friars made difficult shots and UConn missed some easy shots. And that's really the difference maker at the end of the day. I think the Friars got some good mid-range ones in there. Noah Locke hit a couple tough shots in the mid-range. Devin Carter hit a crazy three in Andre Jackson's face. I could not believe that one went in. The best offense is the one that makes shots. So if your offense doesn't run well, but the guys hit the shot anyway, it still counts. And I thought the Friars just kind of did more of that tonight. It wasn't always pretty, but they got the ball in the basket. And yeah, I look at the construction of this UConn team, and the two best three-point shooters right now are Caravan and Calcaterra. Both of them have their issues on defense. So it's a trade-off. And this is the issue we're going to have to see Dan Hurley work through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Matt, one more quick thing for you, too, is I thought Corey Floyd Jr. and Alan Breed and a whole string of guys filled in for when Bynum was hurt there for a little bit really well. And, I mean, Breed went 1 for 5. I mean, it doesn't jump off the page, but he did a very good job of controlling, like, the tempo of the basketball game, and that was impressive.
It felt like they had they had three or four guards out there at times. It was just like they all looked – they're all playing the same style of defense. They just were switching things perfectly. That's where Corey Floyd, I thought, was impressive. Is a redshirt freshman year who's young. So he's basically never played anything before here in college. He's still freshman aged. He went to UConn a year early, redshirted, and then transferred to Providence. So he hit that three at the end of the first half. I thought that was a huge, huge turning point in this one.
That was. Watching Corey Floyd hit that shot, I was like, you know, yeah, it was a tough one. Tough pill to swallow there, especially being, you know, a former UConn player. I mean, you know, that was the only shot he made and even attempted, but I think it was just that on-court presence of him being there that impacted the game a lot, especially when Bynum went out. I think Chris made a great point there, is that you had guys step up in that role. Even Hopkins, he took over the game entirely, but you had those guys come off the bench and fill that role. even if they didn't add a lot to the game scoring wise, I think, again, it was just that presence being there, being disruptive on the ball, just having the presence just there made a big impact for the Friars.
Great team defense night for Ed Cooley. George, I know you said you think UConn's going to drop out of the top 10 here in the AP. Chris, what do you think? If they voted today, where do you think UConn would end up?
Yeah, probably 11 or 12. I mean, I think this one is going to hurt them. I think the Xavier one, nobody's going to really think about it. This one, it does sting a little bit.
I'm not as pessimistic. I think they stay in the top 10. I think they end up at around 8 or 9 because they still have some really good wins in there. And this is two road conference losses. It isn't great, but there's plenty of teams up there with two losses right now. Both are quad one. I think they end up there. Now, what about Providence? Where do the Friars end up?
Hey, I put them number 25 on my ballot for House Enterprise, but I think they're right outside probably.
I would think so. I'd put them a little higher than 25. I think, you know, being 5-0 in conference play, I mean, they've picked up, you know, after, I believe, early December, you know, everyone was kind of counting Providence out, and then they just turned up, you know, a 7-game win streak right now. I think they're, you know, in between that 20 to 25 range. I'll probably put them at 22. I think they've had some really solid wins, and I think beating UConn just puts them up a little bit higher.
The Friars will have a game on Saturday against St. John's before the poll comes out. So we're going to look ahead to the weekend here. I would honestly have the Friars in the top 20 at the moment, just because I think they looked really good tonight. And I think this is a team that has turned a corner. It's an 8-game win streak now. And you mentioned turning the corner coming into December there too. Devin Carter had tweeted out after the team lost to TCU at the end of November, basically kind of apologizing and saying, we're going to right the ship. We're going to get this right. Team has not lost since then. He told me at the last press conference after the DePaul game that they kind of had a team meeting and said, we don't want to play like this anymore, and figured some stuff out after that point. And it's incredible. And this is, it's the 8-game win streaks for the Friars. They did this last year. They had a couple 8-game win streaks in there. And if you string wins together like that, you're going to be in good shape in the season. I mean, that's, you only need to win 6 in a row to win the whole thing. We've seen Providence do that. We've seen Xavier do that. We've seen UConn do that. We've seen Creighton do that. Those are all teams right at the top that we've seen do that.
Yeah, I would like to preface, in my ranking, I would have Providence somewhere between 18 and 21, 22. But I don't think the AP poll loves the Big East, as we've kind of seen. So I hope you guys are right, though.
Yeah, I was shocked to see Xavier at 18 after beating UConn. I thought for sure Xavier was going to end up in the top 15 after that win. So yeah, we'll see what happens. We will move on a little bit here. This was not the only result in the Big East tonight. There were two other games. We'll just start real quick with the early one, and that was the Villanova Georgetown game. This game looked close at one point, and then wasn't. Villanova ends up running away with this one. They beat Georgetown. And I think this is what everybody kind of expected to happen in this. And any real thoughts out of this one?
Nothing really, except for just, you know, Georgetown right now, is it 25 games that they haven't won in Big East or something like that? It's just not a good look, especially for a historic team in a historic conference like that. It is sad to see to kind of Georgetown fall off the cliff.
Yeah, the only thing for me that stood out really, Wahab, 2 shots in 17 minutes. And I believe both of them came within the first like 6 minutes of the game. When Georgetown's really good, and when I say really good, I mean being competitive. He's a big factor in their offense, right? He's putting up 10, 12 shots. So get him more involved. And maybe that's just, Eric Dixon is fantastic at defense. But that's the thing that stood out to me.
Yeah. And that's that 25-game losing streak in the Big East now for Georgetown. That is a record. So it is a historic program still. Not quite in the way I think they were hoping with that one. And I think this is a win Villanova needed too, especially after losing to Marquette. Again, we're going to look ahead to the schedule shortly, but they get a home game against Xavier on Saturday, which I think is a very interesting matchup. I thought Mark Armstrong bounced back a little bit tonight, and they got a little bit more from the freshman, which they're going to need to do to become a tournament team here down the stretch. So they put things together there. In another result, Butler ended up beating DePaul. That one finished up while we were doing this. They pulled away at the end of that one. I think that they were the home team there. I think that is a result we all expected to see. And kind of a win Butler needed after some rough performances to start Big East play.
Yeah, I agree there. I mean, you had Hunter Jr. with 23 points, you know, for Butler. I think that it's a good win. It's a much needed win. It's going to give them a confidence boost kind of going now, you know, down the next few games to help them out a little bit. But then for DePaul, it's just what can you do here now to help you kind of build things back up? And you have to go back to the drawing board a little bit here.
Yeah, and with the injuries, DePaul, like, it's just going to be tough this year. I don't really see them clawing out into, you know, the relevance too much, but they're still fighting, right? 8-point game. They were, I mean, in it for a while, so it is what it is.
Yeah, it's kind of, I kind of marked this season down as an incomplete in general for DePaul with the number of injuries, and yeah. David Jones was the key piece there, and you lose him for reasons you really can't control, the fact that he just wanted to play with his friend at St. John's, and it's a tough kind of, not a step, it is a step back for the program at this point in year two for Tony Stubblefield, but I think it's all outside of the coach's control there. What's been going on for the most part. So we'll check back in on DePaul later. They have a nice little break here. They have 6 days off before their next one. So we'll see them next week. Let's flip back the calendar to yesterday real quick. Chris, we got Creighton, the big, big win here over Seton Hall. It was kind of close early, and then Ryan Kalkbrenner just absolutely turned it on.
Yeah, Kalkbrenner, I think this was, and obviously he showed it against DePaul and Butler, but I think this was the game where it's like, see, there are a lot, like, he changes everything about what Creighton does. Without him, they couldn't even get into sets too much, like offensive sets, which is, you know, concerning in its own right. But Kalkbrenner just makes everything easier. He had 6 blocks, career high. He played really good. And Seton Hall just couldn't match. Seton Hall really couldn't get to the free throw line because Creighton doesn't foul very much. And that's where Seton Hall is succeeding, right, is when they get to the free throw line and shoot a bunch. So, yeah, great win for Creighton.
Yeah, I mean, Creighton's a very good team. I think coming into this season, I had them kind of high up on my list of, you know, games to watch for UConn. And I mean, we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but I think that, you know, Creighton making a step up right now. I think they're going to make a good rise in the Big East. I love Kalkbrenner. I think he's a beast of a player down low. And I think that's going to be the toughest part for UConn coming up.
Yeah. And then, Matt, one more thing here is, and I wrote about this actually earlier today on Road to the Garden. It's just Creighton starting to make shots again, right? In that 6-game losing streak, Alexander and Nemhard shoot 12 for 50 from 3, 24%. And this 3-game win streak, they're 17 for 30. So, you know, they're starting to shoot it better. And this is, I think this is a better, this is what we thought we would get from Creighton, I guess, before the season.
Yeah. Well, it's easier to get into a rhythm on offense when you have kind of the cheat code that is Kalkbrenner out there, and he creates so much space for your shooters to, like, all of that helps you get into the rhythm. And also on defense, it's a lot easier to make shots when it's in transition and you can get steals or whatever, or just not allow teams to get baskets. And that Seton Hall offense is not very good in the half court right now. They took advantage of St. John's over the weekend by getting in transition, but it's not a good offense in the half court. I would never want to have to only be a half court team against Ryan Kalkbrenner. That's just a miserable experience anyway. So you put the two together and that helps you out. The only other game we had Tuesday night was Marquette kind of blitzing St. John's in the second half. It was a St. John's team that was without Andre Curbelo for this one. Apparently he did something he wasn't supposed to. We don't know exactly. Apparently he also showed up to the press conference and was sitting in the back. There's a tweet going around with that in it. I don't really know any details or can't confirm too much on it, but he put it on his story that he was at the press conference. So I don't know what's going on there. This is back-to-back comeback wins on the road for Marquette here on the East Coast, doing it at Villanova, doing it at St. John's, and back-to-back really bad losses here for the Red Storm and a rough start to conference play for Mike Anderson.
You look at this Marquette team, I mean, they're 4-1 in Big East play and 12-4 overall. So this is another team that is slowly making a rise up. I think, you know, Marquette struggled a little bit early on in the season, but this is a pretty complete team. I mean, you had Prosper with 29 against St. John's, who we know is a pretty good defensive team as well. And I think that Marquette kind of going forward could make some noise in the Big East if they kind of just continue this trend that they're on right now, especially with a second half comeback like that and being able to just kind of get a spark going. Those are the things you need. And I wish UConn had that, you know, in the second half to get something going. But, you know, it's good for Marquette to just kind of be able to ride on momentum that they're having.
It's funny you mentioned St. John's being a good defensive team because they allowed 96 points in that one, which is the most mm-hmm. they've given up at Carneseca in a regulation game, at least. They said that on the broadcast, and that's great. It's taking a step back here just for one sec. We can come back to the game here. But I look at Seton Hall and St. John's as two of these New York teams that are supposed to be tough and win with defense. And Seton Hall gave up 80 points. St. John's gives up over 90 yesterday. And it's for two teams that are supposed to win with defense right now, neither one's doing it.
No.
Yeah, and I think it was Del Griffith who tweeted something out, and so shout out to him. But a big point in that game, St. John cuts it to 4 points with like 3 minutes left. David Jones gets a nice dunk, and then St. John's like celebrates and doesn't get back on defense, and it's a fast break layup for Marquette to bring it back to six off of a dunk. They do some undisciplined things, and I'm not sure what that's a reflection of, but they turn the ball over a whole lot. And St. John's, this is not the way Mike Anderson wants to play basketball.
No, and this is four losses in a row now for St. John's, a 1-4 start to conference play. They travel to Providence on Saturday. The road does not get easier for them. They travel to Providence, have a home game against Butler after that, which is interesting. They travel to UConn. They play Villanova, a team they already lost to. They travel to Creighton. There's a world where this team's going to get 2-8 here in the first half of Big East play for a team that was expected to be hanging around the bubble at the very least this year.
Yeah, no, it's not a good state of affairs, but on the bright side, like George was talking about, Marquette, man, Oso is fantastic. So, one of the top, and it's tough because Matt, as we've talked about, how do you rank the Big East centers? There's so many good ones, but Oso, he brings something that is pretty unique to the league, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we'll look ahead. We talk about difficult schedules. UConn's going to have one coming up. We're not even really going to get to it here, but UConn travels to Marquette next week, as does Providence. Both teams go out there, and how they match up in that one I think is going to be very, very interesting to see. And, like, yeah, Oso does bring something different. I don't think any other center plays like him.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the Big East is just filled with great big men. I don't think you don't see it in any other conference, really. I don't think. And I think that's what makes it so unique. That's what is making Big East basketball so interesting again, is that you have all these like 7 foot big men who are dominant. You know, you have no idea if it's going to be, you know, Sanogo player of the year. You had Kalkbrenner up there for a runner up for player of the year this year as well. So, I mean, you have so many great big men that are making a lot of noise, and it's bringing back the old school kind of vibes to Big East basketball that I think a lot of fans love to see, the physicality of it. It's not a lot of outside shooting. You don't see a ton of that now, but it's more, how can I drive in the lane, kick it to a big guy, and just have him finish it for me?
Well, it's what I find interesting about the conference is not only, like, I think there's two different categories of big man here, because you've got Donovan Clingan and Ryan Kalkbrenner and Jack Nungi as these 7-footers who mm-hmm. kind of mammoths out there. And Manny Bates isn't that tall, but he plays that way. And Oso is tall. He kind of plays like that at points. And then you've got Eric Dixon and Adama Sanogo and Ed Croswell, who are all 6'9" in a conference with these guys who are 7-footers, and they all play very well. Adama Sanogo is the highest rated player in the conference coming in tonight. He would have been the player of the year in KenPom. Like that, and Eric Dixon is right up there in the top three as well. Those guys who were ridiculously efficient. I think it's a very interesting balance between the athletic traits and the skill that you need at the position.
Yeah, we'd already hit on Croswell already tonight, but yeah, I mean, undersized, and he's one of the best offensive rebounding centers in all of college basketball. It's crazy what he's able to do.
Yeah. And we didn't even mention Joel Soriano in that conversation. Another guy who does very well as a big guy. All right, should we look ahead to the Saturday slate?
Let's do it.
We got a very interesting Saturday slate of games here. I'll run through what the whole thing is, and then we're just going to start at the top and run through these games. The first game is going to be Creighton at UConn. That's the noon game on Fox. That gets the national television window at the same time on FS1. We're going to get St. John's at Providence. Then 2 p.m. on FS1, Georgetown at Marquette. 4:30, Xavier at Villanova. And then 8:30 in the late slot, Butler at Seton Hall. A lot of really, really interesting storylines going on here, but we'll start with that top one. Creighton, UConn, battle of the bigs. One team kind of needing a win here, slumping. Another team looking to get a statement win there in Creighton. George, we'll start with you here. UConn as the home team, coming off two losses. How confident do you feel coming into Saturday?
I would feel more confident just because of knowing that it's at home, you know, suffering two Big East losses on the road. It'll be good to be in front of your fans again to kind of get that familiarity again. And I think this is a tough matchup. I know in the beginning of the year, I was looking at the schedule, and this is probably one of the games that I was most nervous about for UConn. It was just because of how great Creighton is as a basketball team. And if they are able to kind of, you know, move forward like this and, you know, get a big win against UConn, I think that'll be huge for them moving forward. But for UConn right now, I think it's just you learn from those losses. You learn from Hurley, who's going to be going over a lot of things in practice. I can only imagine what that is going to be like. would like to be a fly in the wall there for those practices after two back-to-back losses. But being at home now, it's going to kind of feel different, you know, after playing in an atmosphere like the Amp, where it's absolutely electric. But now being at home against Creighton in a big game, you have to get a win here.
Yeah. Chris, now Creighton coming in on the 3-game winning streak, turning things around with Kalkbrenner back. What's the confidence level in Omaha?
Cautious optimism, I think, is the right way to put it. Certainly, people are feeling better than they were 2 weeks ago. I think the biggest thing in this one is probably which bench outside of the main cast of characters, which team is going to have better production from the bench, right? And that's been a big part of Creighton's success the last three games is guys like Farabello and Sharif Mitchell and Fred King played pretty well off the bench. And that's not something that has always been the case this season. And then tonight, right off the bench for UConn, like we talked about, there wasn't a lot there. So I think whoever, if Elaine and Calcaterra can come out and hit threes, then so be it. But yeah, I think it's a lot will have to be done with which bench plays better.
Yeah, and it's funny how it seems like it does come down to that a lot of the time. We hype up the stars in these matchups, but a lot of these top Big East teams are all very good at the top. They all have very good players, and they don't cancel out. But they're going to score a lot, and it comes down to what you do kind of around the fringes of the team. But let's talk about the superstars here. This Kalkbrenner-Sanogo is a match. I've had this game circled on my calendar since they released the schedule. I want to see these two guys go after each other in a game like this. George, how do you think they match up? Is this one Sanogo can win? And if he does, how does he do it?
I think he does it with his athleticism. If he wins this matchup, I think if he's able to kind of just put the ball on the floor and drive and just able to get some good shots, I think he's somebody who's able to drive to the basket very well and able to just kind of create space for himself. But he's going to also have to learn how to find that kind of mid-range jump shot as well. Guys are going to start kind of pushing him outside. I think I know I talked about this early on in the season, is that if Sanogo is going to have a great year, he's going to have to shoot the ball. And he just can't do layups every single time. So I think that it's going to be a good matchup where if Sanogo does win it, it's just him being able to create his own shots.
And Chris, the reverse for you here. If Kalkbrenner wins, do you think he does? And if he does, how does he do it?
I absolutely think he does. No, but here's the thing, right, is that Kalkbrenner had been dealing with this mono like essentially the whole entire season. So the only true good center that because of DePaul's injuries and then Seton Hall, but the only true really pretty good center that Kalkbrenner has played at full strength was Manny Bates, and he held him to 6 points and 2 rebounds. in like 30 minutes. So it's, I think Kalkbrenner is really, really, really good, and not everybody understands that at its highest capacity. And I think UConn will still double down. Sonogo's a very good post defender, but they'll still double down on Kalkbrenner, I think. And then that should lead to some open threes for Alexander and Nemhard, and create some space for them to get good jumpers off. So I think that's how Creighton wins this game. And yeah, I in a one-on-one matchup, I would take Kalkbrenner.
I'm looking forward to when Klingon comes off the bench and it's Kalkbrenner versus Klingon. Now that would be a fun matchup.
Yeah, George, here's the question, right? Are they going to deploy the two center look again?
I would like to see it more. I'll be honest. I like it. I think it, because if you look at it from the other side, you know, Providence today, they had to jump off, you know, guys and double team, come down to help a little bit more, because if you had Sonogo on one block, Klingon on the other, and then you double team Sonogo, somebody's going to be open down low. Where's the extra help? Or you kick it out and somebody's open for a three, which hopefully UConn starts to make again. I think that's the big thing, is that they had those opportunities against Providence. But I think I would like to see the Klingon Sonogo dynamic duo down low again. I think it'll work, because when you go down later in the season, come March, and you're in the tournament, you know, if UConn makes it past the first round this year, you know, they're going to go against, you know, the teams like Purdue and Kansas down the road, where they're going to have to play both of them at the same time, because they'll just be undersized.
Right. And, you know, I think Arthur Kaluma poses similar matchup problems, maybe not to the same extent, but similar matchup problems as Bryce Hopkins. And we saw how that turned out with Caravan on him. So I think, yeah, hey, Matt, I think the play is for UConn to run the two center out almost from the get-go.
And there's some really interesting matchups in this game, because I think there's also, this is the two freshman centers, Frederick King also going out there, how he matches up with Kling. And I'm sure at some point they're going to be against each other. Mm-hmm. And that'll be a good opportunity for Frederick King to take another step in his development there. I look at Caravan against Baylor Shireman as something that could be very interesting. I know Creighton's going to try to get Kaluma downhill on Caravan, but if they can protect him, I think Shireman doesn't have quite that same downhill ability that Bryce Hopkins does. So Caravan might be able to be on the floor a little bit more. And if Shireman's a good defender, I think they're going to go back and forth. Kaluma and Alexander with Andre Jackson, Hawkins out there. I mean, up and down the road, there's just so many good athletes in this game. And I think we're in for probably a defensive battle with the way these two teams play and the way they kind of shoot at times and can get into lulls. That's, unless one of these teams goes off with shot making, it might be first to 50 wins.
And that's what I like. I think it's going to be a great defensive matchup. And, you know, everybody loves, you know, the great high flashy offense, but I think when it comes to conference plays, especially in the Big East, that it's the defense that's going to help you win down the road. And I think that's important. And this is a game with two teams that are very focused on defense first kind of mentality. So that's what I think is going to make this matchup just stand out above everybody else on Saturday.
Let's make some predictions in this one. I want to hear what you guys think. And obviously, George, again, you're the home team here. So we'll give you first pick. Who do you think wins?
I think UConn comes back. I think they're going to find some rhythm, bounce back, and let everybody know that they're still top dog.
Chris?
I'll take Creighton 71-68. I think it'll be a little bit more high scoring. But yeah, I think Creighton wins in a really close game.
I'm going to take UConn here. I think the home court advantage matters a lot. I think I look back at that Georgetown game for UConn where things got hairy, and they started making, they made just a couple plays there, and the crowd gets into it, and that just kind of propelled them over the hump. And I think that's what they've been missing on the road here. So I think that'll help. I think a guy like Calcaterra might be able to have another good game here. You know, Joey California or Carabas. Somebody, I think, is, UConn's not the best shooting team in the world, but they're due for a good game here. I think this is where they get it. And then things get tough for them again with a trip to Marquette after that. I think UConn bounces back. That'll be my pick in this one. Let's look at the other noon game. This is one, St. John's traveling to Providence. Talk about two teams headed in opposite directions here. I don't think we even know the status of Andre Curbelo. St. John's did look good for a half Tuesday night. I don't think that's going to get it done against Providence. But do you guys think there's a path to victory here for the Red Storm? Chris, we'll come back to you.
Certainly a path. St. John's is just such a tough case because, you know, they want to run up and down and they want to have the tempo and create turnovers. But when you're turning the ball over a bunch and not making shots, maybe the up-tempo isn't, you know, the way to play. So I think St. John's almost wants to slow it down and as, you know, kind of Providence's style. And so I think St. John's might be able to keep it close. But, yeah, I think Providence wins.
George?
It'll be a rocky road for St. John's if they want to go get the win. I think, you know, Providence being at home and a big win against UConn tonight, I think that just gives them confidence and momentum kind of going forward. And I think, you know, with Hopkins having a great game, he's just going to build off of that. And I think everybody else around him will kind of feed off of his energy where they'll be like, all right, you know, they'll be riding that still. All right, we just beat number four UConn. You know, nobody can really stop us now mentality.
Yeah. I look at the matchup too, and it's a, I don't know, the Friars are not the best half court offense team in the world. When they're in the half court, it's all about trying to get offensive rebounds and stuff. And they got guys who can make shots, like Devin Carter's come around there, Noah Locke's a decent shooter. But I look at St. John's and I see a team that wants to play fast paced. If they want to do that, like, do you want to give Devin Carter and Bryce Hopkins fast break opportunities going the other way? That seems like a very quick way to lose a basketball game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a note here on Providence, by the way, KenPom updated. The Friars came into tonight at number 43 in the country. They're now up to 28. So a 15 place jump in KenPom for the Friars. They've been shooting up. Coming into December, their first game in December against URI, the Friars were at 81 and they are now at 28 here in January 4th. So meteoric rise.
Yeah. UConn stays at 4, by the way.
I think they were number 3, I think, coming into the night.
Yeah.
They're 4 in the AP 3, so they dropped one spot there. Tennessee jumped them. I know. Who's the other team ahead of them now?
It is UCLA.
Interesting. Very interesting. Oh, and it's a very, very slim margin between those two teams.
UCLA has problems. I know this is a Big East podcast, but UCLA, I have thoughts.
I have not watched a second of UCLA basketball this year. Do they still have Tiger Campbell on their team?
Tiger and Jaquez, and then three starters that aren't very good at scoring, but it's what it is.
I remember when Villanova played UCLA last year, I was just spamming the Tiger Campbell puns on Twitter. Everything I could think of with effort. I love him. He's awesome. But I'm going to take the Friars on Saturday too against St. John's. I think it's a coaching mismatch. I think it's an X's and O's mismatch. St. John's, I think, needs to win this game. Like, they're at a point that you have to stop the bleeding. So I think it's going to be a motivated St. John's team, but I don't think they have the guys to get it done. What is interesting is maybe David Jones against Bryce Hopkins. That might give Hopkins more issues than some of the other matchups we've seen. But and the other situation to monitor will be Jared Bynum, who left this game with an injury. We'll have to see when or if he does end up coming back, even without him, though. I think the Friars can get that one done. Let's go to the first early afternoon slot there. Georgetown at Marquette. There's a lot of interesting basketball games on Saturday. This, in all likelihood, is not going to be one of them. I don't see Georgetown's first Big East win in a year and a half here coming at Fiserv Forum, a building where Marquette basically just does not lose. I think it's really a matter of, is this a 20-point game or a 10-point game?
Yeah, no, Marquette next. Yeah.
I think it's unanimous there.
Yeah, I will say, I still think Marquette should also be ranked right now. Mm. I think going up to 24 and then falling out because of a road conference loss and double overtime, if they deserved it before that, then that loss shouldn't drop them out, especially now that that loss looks a lot better than it did. So I don't know. Marquette, their loss to Mississippi State has gotten a little bit worse here, but their loss to Providence has gotten better. I think the Big East should have four teams ranked here, but like with Creighton knocking on the door, with the Creighton win on Saturday, maybe you get five teams in there. We'll see what happens. It's not what's going to happen, but that's how I would do it.
With a Creighton win on Saturday, I'm curious where UConn would be. That would be fascinating.
Yeah, definitely not in the top 10. Maybe not in the top 15. No. You might have might have it Xavier, then Providence, then UConn in the rankings. If that's what happens, then maybe Creighton slipping in. I don't. You might have five Big East teams between 15 and 25 in that scenario.
Just back to back to back.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Every other team in that
perfect range.
Yeah. That kind of feels like where the conference is right now. I'll be honest. The top five, it feels super, super competitive between all of them. And honestly, I don't know which one of them is going to win the conference at the end of the day here.
Not at all. I honestly could make a run. I mean, for Providence to say that they could win it. But I want to stick with UConn just, you know, because I got to back the boys. But I think that just after a little bit of a rough last two games, I think they can make a bounce back.
You know, all five teams have Sweet 16 or more potential. I really do believe that.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens down the stretch here. But this is going to get very – we came in thinking, all right, UConn's going to be the Big East winner, and there's going to be a fight for second and third. Now it's just – it's a free-for-all at the top. Yeah. I mean, Providence 5-0, Xavier's 4-0. UConn's now down to 3-2. And put it all – it's – we're gonna, obviously, there's a lot of basketball left here, but it's great. We're at around the halfway point of the season right now. And Selection Sunday is going to come quicker than you think. So this is going to happen in a hurry where this is going to get sorted out. One of the matchups that I think plays into that is the next one, the 4:30 slot. By the way, I was taking Marquette against Georgetown too, to make that official. Xavier at Villanova in the 4:30 slot. We'll do a little trivia time for you guys. Since joining the Big East, how many wins does Xavier have against Villanova?
Oh man, I'll go with 5.
All right, George, what's your answer?
Ooh, I'll go under and say 3.
Both of you were too high. It's only
no
two
way.
Wins.
Yuck. Yeah.
And what's crazy is they both came on the same day, too. They're both on February 24th, one in 2019 and one in 2016. That's it.
This so that 2018 Xavier team got beat twice. Interesting.
Yeah, and this is – Villanova's had Xavier's number here. We'll do another trivia time. In what year did Xavier last win a game at Villanova? It has happened. This is not a trick question.
1986. I'd say 2000. I don't know.
Yeah, no. Neither of you are very close on this one. It's 1956.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been a while. And I think that's kind of what makes this crazy is we just saw Villanova lose at home to Marquette in kind of a non-Villanova fashion. And it's a Villanova team that's going to come out needing a win. I think this is a must win now for the Musketeers on Saturday. But this is the best Xavier team we've seen in a while. Mm-hmm. And it's not a must win to win at Nova, but this feels like the one where you want to get the monkey off your back.
Yeah.
I think that the storylines in this one are really good. I think this is going to be a very interesting basketball game on Saturday.
I think so. I say Xavier does it. I say they get the win at Villanova, which will be huge for them. But I just think overall, if you look at like a complete team right now, you know, just looking at these two teams, of course, I'd say Xavier has it. Villanova, but I mean, they're also Villanova at the end of the day. Playing at home is always a different type of vibe, you know, for Villanova. So I think that if they're able to, you know, get a win, that will be kind of big for them would be against this Xavier team. But I still believe Xavier does it.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating. I'll probably take Villanova. Xavier has been a little bit more shaky on the road. St. John beat St. John's by 5 on the road, beat Cincinnati, who's not very good, by 3 on the road.
I'm looking down to the wire.
Right, yeah. So Villanova's good at home. They're starting, I mean, you know, over the course of the last 7 games or whatever it's been, they played a little bit better. Yeah, give me the Wildcats.
The matchup I'm looking at for this one here is it's Xavier's shooting because it's such a good 3-point shooting team. against a Villanova defense that has really struggled. I mean, it's struggled everywhere, but it's struggled to defend the outside. And I think this will be a really good test to see if Villanova is starting to turn the corner. I'm going to take Xavier, though. I know the home road splits like you're talking about, Chris, but I think you're going to get a very motivated Xavier team coming into this one that's rested, too. I think that'll be important. They haven't played since beating UConn. So they get that nice little break here to come in and prep for this one. And Villanova looked really shaky at points against Georgetown. Like, the first half, we were wondering, is this going to be the one that does it for Georgetown? Is this going to be the one that breaks the streak? I don't feel that confident in Villanova at the moment.
We'll say, the three games before the UConn game for Xavier, not great performances, right? The Seton Hall game was really tight. St. John's was really tight. And even the Georgetown game for them, very close with 3 minutes left. So I think, maybe, I don't know. I don't know which Xavier team is going to be the more predicative of result of the rest of their season, but they have had some slip ups.
I think Xavier's a team. They strike me as a team that when they're locked in the moments big, they're going to beat teams. And it feels like they kind of let down against teams that aren't as good. And then when the moment was there, they played well. So that's also, I think they're going to treat this like a big game. And this has, Villanova's in this weird spot right now where they've been dominating the conference for a while. So they're going to get everybody's best shot, every single one of these games. They got a target on their back still, but they aren't that old Villanova team. So while other teams are, they're going to get every other team's best shot, they're not that elite team that can handle that anymore. And that kind of becomes, I don't know, it's tough. That's why you're losing to Marquette at home twice in one calendar year there too. They lost twice in 2022 to Marquette at Fiserv. That's incredible.
I will say, I believe Justin Moore has been a participant in practice recently. So yeah. I'm not sure when that's going to happen, but if it happens in the next couple of weeks, that's going to be fantastic. And I'm very much looking forward to Justin Moore putting up 30 against Creighton.
I want to have a follow-up question on this one. If Villanova does lose this game, are their tournament hopes kind of nearly flatlined here?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's it, right? They'd be 500 over halfway through the year. I think it's pretty much tournament or bust.
I agree. I don't think there's really much room to kind of climb up a very big hill for Villanova if they lose, which is sad to see. But I mean, of course, you expect something like that, especially after losing, you know, your great coach in Jay Wright. I'm seeing the same thing with Duke as well. I mean, they're struggling. Yeah. So after losing, you know, of course, Coach K. So I think it's just like one of those years where it's like, all right, you know, we don't make it this year, but let's just kind of rebuild and kind of see where we can go.
Yeah. It becomes tough when you lose the home games here too. Winning on the road is difficult. And now you're in a position where, all right, well, you got to go win at Xavier if you lose this one. You got to go win at Marquette to make up ground here. And I don't know if I believe that this team is going to do it based on what we've seen thus far. If you can't get it done at home, I'm not going to believe you're going to go ahead and do it on the road. That's for sure.
And they already have some like resume bummers on there, right? The Portland loss and then Temple in the Big Five game. So yeah, it would be tough.
Yeah. We're gonna wrap up here. We're nearing the hour mark, so we're gonna finish up with the last game, the late night game on Saturday, which I think is a very interesting matchup. Butler at Seton Hall. I think these are two teams with new coaches that have veteran lineups, want to play good defense, and have kind of streaky offenses. Both of these teams kind of have one really good quality win on their resume at the moment, and also some losses that they would like to forget right now. And I would say both of these teams kind of have tournament hopes alive. Butler's net ranking and Seton Hall's net ranking, like, they're not bad. They're within range where if they start kind of playing better and they pick up a couple of big wins, then they get themselves into the conversation. But this game kind of becomes a determiner of which one of these teams is on top. And I think it's almost an elimination game in some ways. One of these teams is going to be in a real, real bad spot after it.
Yeah, I would take Butler in that one. Mostly just because I think they're the more balanced team, right? They have multiple guys that can score. They have five guys averaging in double digits. One thing that stood out to me watching Butler live is Lukosius is pretty athletic, pretty physical, and it's certainly more than just a scorer. They have guys like that and Chuck Harris, and I think Manny Bates is far and away the best big man on the floor in that one. Yeah, I like Butler.
For me, I think I'm going to take Seton Hall. I think, you know, they're coming into this game 1-4 in Big East play. They need to get another win under their belt if they want to make that tournament push, like you said, Matt. So I think that after a tough, tough loss to Creighton, I think that they need to bounce back in some way that they can kind of rebuild and regroup and able to just kind of get back into that win column, especially in this Big East play. I mean, both these teams are relatively even, you know, when you look at it. So I think that's what's tough about this game is like you can't take one, but I think it's going to be a close game. It'll come down in the final minutes, if it not even free throws.
Yeah, I think this should be a really good game. I'm looking at like Alamir Dawes against Eric Hunter Jr. as something that looks like it'll just be fun to watch. And Seton Hall's got a couple of these forwards that Butler's had a real hard time defending. Seton Hall's got a defense, I think, that can. Seton Hall's defense has been underwhelming, but Butler's an inconsistent shooting team, and I think they can do well. I'm going to take Seton Hall at home here in what I think ends up being a close one. And yeah, that'll round out our week.
Awesome. It'll be a fun Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we got a little NFL currently scheduled for Saturday. So we'll be having a watch. We'll have to throw that on. It'll be a loaded Saturday of sports. So just make sure you do your grocery shopping like tomorrow or Friday and get some nice snacks. You can just make sure you don't have to leave the couch on Saturday. That's the play, right?
Oh, of course. I got to have the chips and dip on hand, you know.
George, you a queso or a salsa guy?
All right. So I do this thing. It's a buffalo chicken dip.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
I don't know if that's a queso.
No.
That's not salsa.
Not in the queso realm.
It's not a guac either.
It's I don't know even know what it is, but it's buffalo chicken, and I put it on a chip, and it's amazing.
Matt, that's what's so your dip good. Of choice?
I'm a salsa guy. A good salsa. That's my favorite. I like guac. It's fine. I'll take it if it's there. I've made homemade guac one time in my life with like fresh cilantro and the lime and everything, and that was fantastic. If you make it yourself, I think it's really, really good. Yeah, Chris, what about you?
I am a true queso guy. I like the cheese sauce. I like everything though. I'm a big snacker.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Let me say I've been munching on the Cheez-Its, the extra toasty Cheez-Its recently. Yeah. That's been my go-to buy at the store. Have you guys gotten the extra toasty ones?
I have.
Yes.
So we're going to end on this question here. Do you think that they intentionally burn some of the Cheez-Its to put into the extra toasty ones, or are they just taking the accidentally burnt ones and putting them in that? And then does that mean that the regular Cheez-Its have less of the burnt ones in them?
Intentionally burn. That's my answer. Final answer.
Intentionally burn. I would say intentionally burn as well.
It has to be, right? All right. We're gonna end on that note. A wild Wednesday here in the Big East. Friars up to 5-0 at the top of the conference. That's the lead story here, taking down number 4 UConn. I believe we're going to be back for you on Sunday after that Saturday slate that we just talked about. So, thanks for joining me, guys. And everybody listening, make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening. Subscribe on YouTube if you want to see us there and see our faces while we talk about queso and salsa and the Big East. But thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you Sunday.